The headlines this hour. One more Palestinian dies in a new Israeli strikes on the Gaza Strip, one day after the regime kills 15 Palestinians during airstrikes on besieged territory. Foreign ministers of Iran, Syria, Russia, and Turkey are meeting in Moscow to discuss the situation in Syria. And Pakistan tightens security amid mounting tensions following the arrest of former Prime Minister Imran Khan. Well, welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us. Israel keeps pounding the Gaza Strip for the second day, targeting several locations across the besieged Palestinian territory. Palestinian medical officials say at least one Gazan has been killed and several more, including a child, wounded in the fresh Israeli raids. The latest death brings to 16 the number of Palestinians killed since the regime began hitting Gaza early on Tuesday. Women and children, along with three commanders of the Islamic Jihad resistance movement, were among those killed. Resistance fighters have fired dozens of rockets into Israel in response to the latest attacks by the regime. The resistance movements already pledged that they would retaliate Israeli crimes against Palestinians in Gaza. Let's talk to Olal Asi, a correspondent over in Gaza, who joins us now. Olal Asi, what's the latest that you have for us?
Yes, Israel keeps pounding the besieged Gaza Strip. Now we can hear the artillery shelling and the airstrikes over several parts along this strip. The latest Israeli strike targeted several places to the south, to the east of the Gaza Strip, resulting in three injuries. Some of them are in critical injuries. And the other airstrikes targeted the northern of the Gaza City, which resulted also in injuries. The series of airstrikes continued for the second consecutive day. The Israeli escalated its firing, its rockets, and shelling over the Gaza Strip, trying to draw the Palestinian resistance response to the violations and the crimes, the assassination of the commanders. And the latest updates from the reports, the news, the health ministry confirmed that the death toll rises to 16 Palestinians, including three commanders of the Islamic Jihad, and more than 30 people were injured. Most of them are children and women, and they have critical injuries. The Palestinian resistance started, as officials say, its response to the Israeli aggression, and barrages of rockets now are firing to several places, to several settlements adjacent to the borders of Gaza Strip, and to Sidrout, to Asqalan and Nahal Oz. Now we can now read the news, the Israeli news, saying that sirens are sounded in Tel Aviv, which means that rockets are reaching about 100 kilometers. The 100 kilometers around the Gaza Strip are now under the umbrella group rockets.
What have we heard from the resistance groups, in particular the Islamic Jihad, when it comes to how they're going to respond?
Yes, so far the Islamic Jihad said that the firing is only from the Islamic Jihad rockets, and we still are waiting for the press release of the joint operation room of the umbrella group, the armed resistance in Gaza. So far, no response, but officials from Hamas have stated that the response will be united, and the rockets will be firing from all the Palestinian resistance factions, and the Israeli regime will pay a heavy price for its crimes against the Palestinian civilians and for the assassination of the three Islamic Jihad commanders.
Well, Leslie, thank you so much. Correspondent, they're talking to us from Gaza. Thank you. Meanwhile, Palestinians have held a funeral procession for two more people killed in a fresh Israeli attack in the occupied West Bank. The regime's forces resorted to live fire on Palestinians during a raid on the city of Jenin. According to eyewitnesses, during the raid, Israeli snipers took position on the rooftops, while others forcefully entered a number of homes and destroyed people's property. Israeli forces then closed the main streets in the town while laying siege to a number of homes. The regime has stepped up attacks across the occupied territories over the past months. More than 100 Palestinians have been killed in the West Bank so far this year. A correspondent to Ramallah, Mona Kandil, says Palestinians are desperately waiting for the international community to take action against Israel for its crimes.
Every day, Israeli forces raid Palestinian areas, arrest people, destroy their homes, confiscate their lands, and kill people in cold blood. Not all of these Palestinians that are being killed by the Israeli forces are Palestinian fighters or members of the resistance groups. Many of those who are murdered are civilians, children, women, elderly. But at the end of the day, the international community is only issuing statements of condemnation, not more than this, calling the Israeli forces to stop their illegal, or even they didn't describe the practices as illegal. They are only demanding the Israeli forces to stop measures of aggression against the Palestinians. So the Palestinians do not expect anything from the international community or even the United Nations or even the Arab states. What the Palestinians really want, not a statement of condemnation, they want a serious position from the world to force the Israeli regime to stop their crimes. But knowing at the end of the day, as long as the Israeli regime is backed by the American administration, then they would continue to act as a state above the law. They would continue to keep reminding the Palestinians that they are under occupation and that they don't have the right to fight till the till ending this Israeli occupation.
Chief of Staff of Iran's Armed Forces, Major General Mohammad Baghedi, has met with the Sultan of Oman, Haytham bin Tariq al Muscat, to discuss security cooperation between the two countries. During their meeting, the Omani ruler and the Iranian general also discussed regional issues. Sultan Haytham called for mutual defense collaboration and said that he would pay a visit to the Islamic Republic in the near future. General Baghdadi, for his part, stressed the importance of joint efforts by the two neighbors to boost regional security. He said the future world order would be based on multilateralism, adding that the global shift of power from the West to the Asia-centered is imminent. Baghdadi held talks with other Omani officials during his visit to the country that ended on Tuesday. Here in the capital, Tehran, the top Iranian general, Mohammad Baghdadi, on Wednesday addressed an international conference on the new world order geometry. He said Iran's Islamic revolution has been one of the pillars to fight the U.S. hegemonic agenda around the globe. The major general highlighted U.S. failures in several regional countries, including Afghanistan and Iraq, despite spending billions of dollars on its military adventurism. He said even Washington's traditional allies do not trust it anymore, adding that the U.S. is isolated more than ever. The top Iranian general also said that the U.S. power has diminished significantly over the past decades. The two-day conference has brought together thinkers, officials, and academics from some 37 countries. The topics such as new concepts in the formation of a new world order and its components will be discussed. A quadrilateral meeting between the foreign ministers of Syria, Turkey, Iran, and Russia is being held in Moscow. Officials are to raise a series of issues, with the stated focus being on the current situation in Syria. Our correspondent Marina Kortanova joined us from the Russian capital to tell us what has been going on behind closed doors.
The talks are taking place in one of the halls of the reception house of the Russian Foreign Ministry on Spiridonovka. I'm in the press center at the moment. So it is expected that during the meeting, the foreign ministers will discuss issues on return of Syrian refugees to their homeland, as well as the fight against terrorism. The Turkish authorities will raise the issue of the return of Syrian refugees. And now, as you know, the Syrian authorities are not able to provide conditions for the return of refugees from Turkey. Lavrov, Abdullahian, Mikdad, and Çavuşoğlu meet in the light of attempts to normalize relations and eliminate contradictions between Damascus and Ankara, and the countries are participants in the Astana process to resolve the Syrian crisis. Also, as you know, in Moscow, in the end of April, talks were held between the defense ministers of the four countries. And the Syrian Minister of Defense then stated that the issue of the withdrawal of Turkish troops from the country's territory was discussed during the meeting. The Turkish Defense Ministry told that the parties discussed concrete steps for Moscow to normalize relations between Ankara and Damascus. If the subsequent results of the meeting are successful, a Turkish-Syrian summit should follow, but it is difficult to predict the results in advance, especially considering how long the parties have been going to this meeting in Moscow. In early April, technical consultations between the deputy foreign ministers of the four countries were held in the Russian capital as well, and they were also meant to produce the exact day and content of this ministerial meeting, which intends to facilitate the normalization of relations between Syria and Turkey. Yesterday, upon his arrival, Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian also expressed hope that the Moscow talks would create conditions for the return of Syrian refugees to their home country and the withdrawal of U.S. troops from Syria.
Security has been beefed up around the police headquarters in the Pakistani capital, Islamabad, where former Prime Minister Imran Khan is under custody. Police say the extra measure has been taken ahead of Khan's scheduled hearing at the location, since he will not be brought to court. The stage is now set for possible clashes between the police and Khan's supporters, who are planning to march to the capital. On Tuesday, the former premier was detained from the High Court, where he had gone to seek bail in multiple cases registered against him. In response, Khan's Pakistan Tehreek-e-Insaf party called for a nationwide shutdown and protest. Meanwhile, the vice chairman of the party and a close aide of Khan urged supporters to remain peaceful during demonstrations.
When they saw the most popular leader in the country being dragged by Islamabad police, there was a reaction all over the country. From Karachi to Khyber, people are out in the streets, they are protesting, and they will continue to protest. But I've asked them, protest is their legal constitutional right. Keep it peaceful. Do not get into people's houses. Do not destroy public or private property. But peaceful protest is our right.
Scuffles broke out between police and protesters outside the Islamabad High Court following Khan's arrest. Nearly 1,000 people have been arrested in Punjab, the country's most populous province. Officials say that over 130 police officers have been injured and over 25 police vehicles set on fire in Punjab. Clashes have been reported elsewhere in the country as well. Authorities have issued an emergency order banning gatherings in three of Pakistan's four provinces. The Manhattan Federal Court has found the former president of the United States, Donald Trump, liable for sexually abusing magazine writer E. Jean Carroll in the 1990s. Jurors decided that Trump should reward his accuser $5 million in punitive damages. That includes compensation for defaming Carroll. She's argued that Trump's public denials wrecked her career. The former president says the court decision is a, quote, disgrace. Trump will appeal the verdict. He says the trial is evidence of a, quote, democratic plot to tarnish his political image. Carroll has said she decided to break her silence in 2017 after rape allegations against Hollywood producer Harvey Weinstein prompted scores of women to come forward with accounts of sexual violence by powerful men. A new study shows half the residents in the U.S. city of Chicago have been exposed to gun violence by the age of 40. The survey, published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, was conducted on a sample of over 2,400 participants. The results showed the average of the participants were first exposed to gun violence by the age of 14. Also, 7% had been shot, while 50% had seen someone shot. The study also found that black people live in social contexts with far higher risk of seeing or becoming victims of firearm-related incidents. Also, separate studies suggested that young men in certain Chicago neighborhoods face a greater risk of dying from gun violence than U.S. military troops who served in Afghanistan or Iraq. The U.S. is among countries with the highest rate of gun violence. Almost 14,000 people have died from gun violence across the country so far in 2023.
The gun violence nightmare continues in the U.S. 8 people were shot and several others wounded by a gunman at a busy mall north of Dallas, Texas. The gunman, whom authorities said they believe acted alone, was killed by a police officer after he began firing outside of the mall. He was wearing tactical gear and carrying an AR-15-style rifle during the attack. One young eyewitness described the horrifying moments as the shooting unfolded, including the terrifying sounds of the gunfire, and she remains fearful that such an attack could reoccur.
When I heard it, it was like really loud. It kept going like
And what my dad heard, it was like a pling in a car. And then when we were running, the shots got closer to us, like really, really close. And I thought they were running towards us since we were all running around and there were more people running around us. I felt really scared because many people were running for their lives and some people didn't survive. Some got injured. I'm still feeling scared because it could happen to us at school. It could happen to us at another mall.
Reports say the social media accounts of the shooter contained hundreds of posts with racially or tragedy.
The people who are hurting the most, obviously, families of the victims, families who've lost a loved one, families who have a loved one who is injured.
Abbott also said there has been a dramatic increase in the amount of anger and violence that's taking place in America. He said mental health problems are the root cause and should be answered. Mass shootings have become commonplace in the United States. Since the beginning of 2023, more than 200 mass shootings have taken place in the country. Credible estimates show that nearly 15,000 people have died this year in gun violence incidents. Firearms outnumber the population in the United States, where victims of gun violence are higher than any developed country.
And that is for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
In the limelight.
In the U.S., claims of crime have exposed the rift in Georgia's pro-Trump fake electoral group. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. A new legal filing has exposed a potentially major rift among a group of so-called bogus voters in Georgia who sought to help Donald Trump overturn the 2020 election results in a scheme currently being the subject of a criminal investigation. According to a court document filed on Tuesday, 18th of April, A group of people involved in the scheme recently told state prosecutors that another of the fake voters had committed crimes in which they were not involved. The finger-pointing, included in a document submitted by Fulton County District Attorney Fannie Willis, reveals a rift within the group as prosecutors near the end of their investigation and consider bringing charges against the former President Donald Trump and dozens of his allies. The court filing was primarily aimed at disqualifying attorney Kimberly Devereaux, who represents 10 of the fake voters, from the case because of a twisted new conflict of interest that arose last week when some of her clients implicated another of her clients in an additional crime. Certain constituents have said that another constituent represented by Ms. Devereaux committed acts which constitute violations of Georgia's law and that they were not a party to these additional acts, Fannie Willis said in the document, which did not specify the nature of the alleged crimes. The fact that 10 of Kimberly Devereaux's clients have filed criminal complaints against another of his clients in the same investigation suggests that Devereaux can no longer offer adequate counsel to her client accused of other crimes and must be removed from the case altogether, according to the court filing. In seeking Kimberly Devereaux's disqualification, prosecutors pointed to Georgia State Supreme Court's 2013 decision to disqualify an attorney representing a defendant and the defendant's sister-in-law after the sister-in-law ended by testifying against the original client. The court filing also called for Kimberly Devereaux to be removed from the case after she and her co-lawyer at the time, Holly Pearson, appeared to ignore a July 2022 order from the investigating judge to understand that false voters that they could make immunity agreements. A month after the order, according to the document, Holly Pearson claimed that she and Kimberly Devereaux had spoken to their clients about immunity agreements and that none of their clients were interested. Holly Pearson then moved to represent only one voter, with Kimberly Devereaux representing the rest. But when prosecutors interviewed some of the bogus voters last week, they were surprised to learn that no potential immunity offers were ever discussed with them, according to the court filing. Kimberly Devereaux could not be immediately reached for comment. British News of The Guardian has also covered the same story and tells us more. A new legal filing has exposed a potentially major fracture among a group of so-called fake electors in Georgia who sought to aid Donald Trump in overturning the 2020 election results in a scheme now under criminal investigation. According to a court document filed on Tuesday, 18th of April, a group of people involved in the scheme recently told state prosecutors that another one of the fake electors committed crimes that they were not involved in. The finger-pointing, included in a document submitted by Fulton County District Attorney Fannie Willis, exposes a rift within the group as prosecutors near the end of the investigation and consider bringing charges against the former President Donald Trump and dozens of his allies. The court filing principally sought to disqualify attorney Kimberly Devereaux, who represents 10 of the fake electors, from the case because of a twisted new conflict of interest that arose last week when some of her clients implicated another of her clients in an additional crime. The allegations of additional illegal activity by one of the fake electors comes as prosecutors from the district attorney's office consider asking a new grand jury to dismiss a potentially sprawling criminal conspiracy against Donald Trump, his top aides, and the fake voters themselves. Fannie Willis and her team could finalize their plans as soon as the end of the month and then form a grand jury for May to hear the case, according to a source familiar with the matter, although it is not clear whether the latest development could delay procedure. Donald Trump is considered to have two main legal risks in Georgia. The calls he has made to officials like Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger to reverse his electoral defeat in the weeks following the 2020 presidential election and its role in bringing together false voters. But at the heart of the investigation are the steps that Donald Trump and his campaign aides took, knowing it was likely illegal, in rounding up 16 pro-Trump voters to surreptitiously enter the Georgia state capitol and submit unauthorized electoral college votes for Trump in Congress. The special investigative grand jury that heard evidence for about 7 months about Donald Trump's efforts to overturn the 2020 election results recently recommended more than a dozen people for indictment. His foreman also suggested in media interviews last month that Donald Trump was among them.
علي حبه جنة وسيم النار والجنة وسي المصطفى حقا إمام الناس والجنة.
The Gate of Knowledge. Exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Wassalatu wassalamu ala Sayyidina Muhammadin wa ala Ahli Baytihi Tayyibin Tahirin. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you all to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about the topic of prophethood based on the teachings of Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahjul Balagha. We are basing our discussions on the first sermon, whereby in one of the phrases, Imam Ali alayhi salam says that one of the reasons behind the coming of the messengers is that وَيُثِيرُ لَهُمْ دَفَائِنُ الْعُقُولِ, that these messengers, they come and they extract, they excavate, they bring forth the hidden intellects of the people, like of the societies. That is one of their important duties. And we say that many of times these intellects are buried because of these false ideas and imaginary concepts that are being put forth by the enemies of humanity, which includes the shaitan, the Satan, that includes the human beings that seek to control other human beings and seek to exercise their authority over them. Basically, both types of devils that we have in the world, which are the devils of the jinn, and the devils of the human beings, both of them, their job is to uncover, or rather to bury the intellect. And the job of the prophets is to excavate it and to show, to bring it back to light.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Now, one of the very important things that we need to keep in mind here is that these enemies, sometimes they completely stop human beings from thinking. Sometimes they give wrong information. Sometimes they also give and present wrong methods for people to try and learn and understand things. So, for example, sometimes you'll see their educational system is a problematic system. How do I say so? For example, in the previous times, they would encourage people to just memorize and cram. And the system of studies was based on, for example, memorizing formula and things like that. And not really trying to ponder and think in their own ways. Or, for example, they would make the educational process a very lengthy one, a repetitive and lengthy one that would discourage strong intellects and geniuses to flourish. And this is another problem, that another type of, you can say, man-made catastrophe for the human intellects. And large amounts of intellects have gone down the drain due to this thing. Another thing that the enemies are famous for doing is the issue of brain drain. So, for example, when they find intellects that are very strong and good, they drain those intellects to their own places and their own countries and make them part of the system. Brainwash them and make them part of their own suppressive and aggressive systems. And we can see this happening in different parts of the world, especially right now. You can see that happening in some of those foreign countries, some of the Western countries that are using this procedure to get different forms of intellectual people into their own fold. And these have been happening throughout time to control, keep control over the intellects and to make sure they are in one direction. But, as we said, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in the Quran has encouraged people to think in ways that the enemies do not want us to think. So, for example, the enemy doesn't mind you to research about the camel, let's say, and find out, for example, how the digestive system works and how the, you know, how it is able to stay in the desert and, you know, stay without water for a long time. He doesn't mind you to do that research. But the moment you try to connect this to the divine and make it as a sign of a divine power and a divine force, then there is a problem there. That's where the Western educational system will block any intellectual person to take that step, that divine step to understand things in a further manner.
IRIB English Radio presents a detailed commentary of the Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him, on the program Gate of Knowledge.
So now, we've seen that the intellectual control over the people is in different dimensions when it comes to the Western authorities trying to make sure that people think in a certain way. You look at the news outlets, for example. The news is one of the very, very important manifestations of the control over the intellects. You look at the information that is spread to the people. It is very, very much biased. It's very much sometimes mixed with controversies and false reports, false information. You look at the Iran, look at the, for example, the information given about Iraq, which was a pretext for them to attack Iraq, let's say. It was based on false information. The Afghanistan attack, the same. The Vietnam War, the same. All the recent wars that were done by the Western powers
towards the Eastern Hemisphere were all based on false pretexts, and these were encouraged by the media. So when we talk about dafa'inul uqul, the intellects that are buried, we mean buried in this way, buried by the media, buried by superstition, buried by false information and false academia, false research. All of this is burying the intellect of the people and not allowing them to think in a divine direction. While Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in the Quran wants people to realize that all of these are the signs of God, and they are signs of the presence of a very powerful being that is beyond our general perceptions. And therefore it is important for us to go towards that direction. Inshallah, in the coming session, I'll give you other examples of this and explain how Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and the prophets of God want us to think so that we can achieve the very right freedom that we deserve as human beings. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom, on the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio.
قال النبي محمد من كنت مولاه هذا علي سيد فاز من ولاه هو بالكتاب مسدد والنور معنا باب العلوم ومرشد هو آيات الله من نداه أو لبه حين دعاه نال مناه هو في الشدائد منجد والفضل يمناه هو في المحاسن أحمد والوحي رباه.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Iran Sat or Bat 5 and Intel Sat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Limelight. In the wake of Western sanctions on Russia, China has pushed to conduct more trade using its currency, the yuan, in an effort to reduce its reliance on the US dollar. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. China's Global Times has covered this story and tells us more. Bangladesh and Russia have agreed to use the Chinese yuan to settle payments for a nuclear plant that Moscow is building in the South Asian country, a Bangladeshi official has confirmed. The two countries have chosen to use the Chinese currency, the yuan, for settlement in a project that does not involve China. This marks another milestone in the yuan's internationalization. Bangladesh and Russia agreed to use the yuan to settle payment also adds new evidence to the rising de-dollarization trend. It's an indisputable fact that an increasing number of major economies, both developed and developing, are striving to ditch the US dollar through innovative cross-border payment and settlement mechanisms, signing bilateral currency agreements and promoting the diversification of currencies. The Russia-Bangladesh Pact to settle payments in yuan will be conducted through China's Cross-Border Interbank Payment System, or CIPS, according to media reports. As the yuan's internationalization keeps gaining pace in recent years, more and more countries are accepting yuan payments through this system. The yuan-centered payment network, which was launched by the Chinese Central Bank, the People's Bank of China, in October of 2015, has been rapidly gaining popularity among the expediting yuan internationalization, with 79 direct participants and 1,287 indirect participants, covering 109 countries and regions around the world, as of the end of February of this year. While announcing its joining in the China's Cross-Border Interbank Payment System, CIPS, in March, the Brazilian bank Banco Bocom, BBM, said that its aim is to reduce the cost of commercial transactions. NBD Bank, a Russian bank for small and medium-sized businesses, joined CIPS earlier this month, said that the move helps to improve quality of its services by reducing the processing time for yuan payments. Choosing to use the Chinese yuan, the currency of the second largest economy and top trading partner of more than 120 countries, to settle payments through CIPS, other countries are also clearly in consideration of economic efficiency rather than geopolitics. Against the backdrop of an accelerating de-dollarization wave, many Western media outlets have portrayed the Cross-Border Interbank Payment System, the CIPS, as a yuan-driven alternative to the dollar-dominated SWIFT system. It must be pointed out that this is misleading. The CIPS system is introduced to satisfy the inherent demand for cross-border payments amid yuan internationalization process. It is not designed to target any other currency or any other system. Evidently, de-dollarization is the self-inflicted result of America's own actions. For a long time, the irresponsible monetary policy of the US and Washington's reckless sanctions, backed by the hegemony of the US dollar, have severely impacted the economies of many countries in the world. The choice of these countries to bypass the US dollar in international trade and economic cooperation is just to avoid the risk brought by the hegemony of the US dollar. Even US Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen has admitted that US financial sanctions are endangering the dominant status of the US dollar. As the US continues to impose sanctions on other countries at will, targeted nations are seeking alternatives, which over time could undermine the hegemony of the US dollar. Janet Yellen was quoted as saying by CNN. The association between the self-inflicted de-dollarization and yuan internationalization is typical zero-sum thinking. In face of the US sanctions and irresponsible monetary policies, other countries' choice to bypass dollar settlement with other currencies should be respected. More importantly, the legitimate development of the yuan's internationalization should be respected. The dollar hegemony has benefited the United States at the expense of other countries for far too long. It is time for the U.S. to reflect on its irresponsible policies and irresponsible practices and its abuse of the dollar hegemony, as well as the Cold War mentality, rather than further attempting to discredit the yuan's internationalization and other countries' independent choices. The British newspaper The Guardian has also covered the same story and tells us more. For more than a decade, Beijing has been trying to reduce its reliance on the US dollar, motivated by risks emerging from the US economy, such as the financial crash of 2008-2009 and the desire to boost its own sphere of influence. But in the last year, a drive to insulate China's economy from dollar-based sanctions has emerged as possibly the most important incentive for decoupling from the US dollar, as China looks to prepare for the possibility of conflict with Taiwan. After the start of the Russia-Ukraine conflict, one of the most powerful tools for inflicting economic harm on Moscow was to essentially cut the country off from transactions based on US dollar, limiting its ability to trade with other countries. But as well as pushing the Kremlin, there has been an unintended winner from Western sanctions regime, the Chinese yuan. Last year, the share of Russian imports paid for in yuan rose from 4% to 23%. In February, the Chinese yuan overtook the US dollar as the most traded currency on the Moscow exchange for the first time in history. China's push to boost the internationalization of its currency predates the war in Ukraine, and although the yuan is still far behind the US dollar in terms of global activity, between March of 2001 and March of 2023, its share of the trade, finance market, the multi-trillion dollar ecosystem that underpins 80% of world trade, more than doubled, according to data from SWIFT, an interbank messaging platform. China is also encouraging other countries to adopt the yuan for international transactions. Argentina and Brazil recently reached agreements to pay for Chinese imports in Chinese yuan rather than US dollars. In April, Bangladesh announced that it had approved a payment in Chinese yuan worth $318 million to settle part of a Russian loan that had been used to finance a nuclear power plant development in Bangladesh. It is a rare example of the Chinese yuan being used for an international transaction that does not involve China. Daniel McDowell, a China fellow at the Wilson Center, a think tank, says, "To date, international use of the Chinese yuan as a payment currency has primarily involved China on one end of the deal. To do business with Russia, foreign partners do not really have alternatives. They will have to consider using less traditional payment currencies like the Chinese yuan and the Russian ruble. China's economy is far more intertwined with the West than Russia's is, and many analysts think it would be impossible for the West to punish China economically without inflicting massive self-harm. Still, China wants to protect itself as much as possible, and the internationalization of the Chinese yuan is one part of that defense. In March, a Chinese company used yuan to buy 65,000 tons of liquefied natural gas, LNG, from Total Energies, a French multinational, the first time that China's currency has been used in an international liquefied natural gas, LNG transaction. Beijing does not want to be dependent on the use of US dollars for essential imports, so this is a key step in ensuring China's energy security. In an article published last year, Xu Jin, the chief economist at China Energy, a state-owned company, wrote that China must work faster to drive the internationalization of the Chinese yuan in order to protect its energy supplies in the wake of Western sanctions against Russia. China has also developed an alternative to SWIFT, as well as a digital currency, the electronic Chinese yuan. These technological innovations are less important than the political factors that influence the yuan's international popularity, but they are part of Beijing's broad campaign to transform its currency into an attractive alternative to the US dollar. The campaign to decouple from the dollar is also linked to national pride. A recent report on China's quest for financial self-reliance notes that, by definition, China can't claim to be a great power if it continues to rely on the US dollar for trade, foreign borrowing, and the pricing of energy and commodities. But for China's leaders, a more prominent international role for the yuan needs to be balanced against the party's grip on domestic financial markets. Truly internationalizing the yuan would mean loosening the government's control over capital flows and allowing the market to play a bigger role in the currency's valuation.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.
تلاوت القرآن با صوت خوش، با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزایی لازم است.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن. از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran. Quran.
کتاب الله. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hussain Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program Hadith of the Day here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we are going to be looking at a very beautiful and noble hadith which has been transmitted from Imam Ali alayhi salam. This hadith is about employment and livelihood. You know, employment and livelihood is a topic which is very important. It has been alluded to in a couple of places in the Holy Quran. For example, in one place in the Holy Quran, we read the following. Is it they who dispense the mercy of your Lord? It is we who have dispensed amongst them their livelihood in the present life and raised some of them above others in rank, so that some may take others into service, and your Lord's mercy is better than what they amass. Also, in another place in the Holy Quran, we read the following. One of the two women said, Father, hire him. Indeed, the best you can hire is a powerful and trustworthy man. In this regard, Imam Ali alayhi salam has been narrated as having said, of course, the Imam says this regarding the verse that we first mentioned. It is we who have dispensed amongst them their livelihood. The Imam said, Allah the Exalted told us that employment is one of the means of people's livelihood. He, in His wisdom, diversified their aspirations, motivations, and other states. Then He made man's employment of one another one of the means of people's livelihood. If every one of us was forced to build for himself, make his own furniture, and produce everything himself, the world's condition would not be bearable, and people would not be able to endure them. You know, this is a kind of an allusion to something that a lot of the philosophers, like Ibn Sina, towards the end of the Ilahiyat al-Shifa, he mentions this fact that why is it that human beings, they come together and form societies? And it goes back to the fact that, you know, their needs are so great that it's impossible for them to individually secure all of them. So they have to come together and work together in order to secure, you know,